on today's episode of the Hot Nerd Podcast, we're going to come back to that question, do we want to know more or do we want to know less? But today we're going to talk about it through the lens of the hamster wheel, the hamster wheel of safety in particular. So let's just jump right and talk about it. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at thehopnerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Hello, howdy, hi everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. This is your host, maybe not with the most, but with hopefully a good chunk of it, some of that mostestness, Sam Goodman of the Hop Nerd LLC and the Hop Nerd Podcast. Welcome. I am always glad to get to be here with you, and I hope that you are just as pumped as I am to keep having these conversations. We're slowly creeping, inching, crawling towards 400 episodes. We're in like the mid threes, like mid to low threes right now. I don't know what number this is. It's less than 350. That's my best guess. And it's more than 300. It's somewhere in that half of things. But each and every week, we're growing more and more and more episodes and bringing you these really, really, really cool conversations. And I hope that you're enjoying it. I hope that you're liking it. I think that you are. You know that I'm not a numbers dude. I'm not a numbers person. But every now and again, you know, I look at those and it's cool to see. I don't put too much weight into that. And here's the reason why. Because if I talk about something and it makes the numbers spike and I'm watching those numbers real close, then it just makes me want to talk more about those things. And maybe that's not the only things we need to talk about. I'm going to call this the YouTube effect. Yeah, and you see this. You follow people on YouTube. I follow people on YouTube. I mostly follow like wacky comedians and wacky podcasts and stuff that's not safety. I mean, don't get me wrong. I follow some safety folks too. There's some great podcasts and great YouTube and just great resources out there. Of course, I follow some of those things, but in my day-to-day life, I live in this stuff. And so I'm always looking for something that's a bit more lighthearted and maybe funny and naughty funny. I don't know. I like stuff like YMH. If you don't know YMH, I don't know that you should look it up. It's probably not your cup of tea. I think it's freaking hilarious. I like comedians. I like watching comedy. I like watching stuff like Kill Tony and things like that. Just absolutely love it. Those are kind of my go-tos. But this wasn't supposed to be a rant on what I like to watch on YouTube. My point is that we see it on YouTube and with a lot of content creators. They make a video and that video gets a ton of views. And then, of course, I'm going to try to repeat that recipe for success. So I'm going to make it that way. In that same fashion, the same similar subject to try to repeat those views. And it works. It works. And those aren't bad. Like there's a lot of great stuff out there that's created that way. But I tend to avoid the numbers because I don't want it to really influence the things that we talk about here. So I go browse and I look. And when I do look at those maybe once or twice a year, I see that you're there. I know that you're there, and there are quite a bunch of you there. And it's cool. It's absolutely cool. So out of all you folks that are tuning in and really appreciating the podcast and really like what we've got going on, do me a favor. Scroll down into whatever player that you're listening to this on and leave us a 5-star review. That helps an absolute ton. You know, algorithm. It helps us take this message a bit farther and a bit wider, right? Which is awesome. I think that's exactly what we want to do with these ideas of operational learning and treating people like people, humanizing our approaches, human organization performance, whatever wacky name we want to put on the things that we're doing around here, trying to make things just a little bit better. But it helps an absolute ton. Every time you pick up a t-shirt or some stickers, or again, even just sharing the podcast, leaving us a review, interacting with our social media stuff. Again, it's algorithm. And I say that in the voice of the little meme business, if you know what I'm talking about. It's a good one. But thanks for being here, and thank you for all of your love and your support in everything that we've had going on for the past 5, 6, 7 or so years, and starting the podcast, continuing to do the podcast, and everything we've got going on with the Hop Nerd LLC. Thanks for bringing me out to your organizations. Thanks for bringing me out to your keynotes. It always means a ton. I mean, it really does. When I say I'm glad to be there, I genuinely mean that. It means a ton to me that you would think of me when you're planning that special event, when you're planning those workshops, when you're wanting to have those conversations, or you're looking for somebody to coach or facilitate operational learning, or all the kind of things that we do in this world. It means an absolute ton to me, and I don't take those things lightly. It's always appreciated. I'm always super grateful and pumped, and absolutely pumped, honored. I'm absolutely honored that you think of me and that you bring me into your organizations or to your events to have some of these conversations. I don't take those things lightly. So thank you for that, whether it's that or just listening to the podcast or talking to me on social media or jumping on those Zoom calls that so many of us, we get together and just hang out and talk hop, or meeting up with me for a cup of coffee when I'm in your neck of the woods. I love it. I like it. I love it. I got to have it. If you don't know it, those are Cold Stone Creamery sizes. I would know that. Yeah, I like it. Love it. Got to have it. And it means an absolute ton to me to get to be a part of this community with each and every one of you. Now, before we jump into today's episode too much further, some update stuff, and you know the stuff I'm going to share with you here as well. Make sure you go over the website. I'm going to go to it right now. Look, I'm on the website. Can you hear that? That was me clicking extremely hard. I'm going to scroll all the way down to the bottom of the website. And if you don't know, it is thehopnerd.com. And down at the bottom, you're going to see a little gray box, and you're going to see something that says mailing list. Look, I clicked it. Okay, I clicked it, and boom, it just pops up. First name, last name, email. Click subscribe. Yeah, and there you go. You got to agree to the little thing that says I can send you emails. That's part of the world that we live in nowadays, right? But first name, last name, email, I agree. And hit subscribe, and then you start getting the weekly check-in. I've talked about it a bunch. If you don't know what it is, it's just my weekly newsletter that gives you all the info on basically everything that I've got going on, from podcasts to new videos to where I'm at in the world to new merch to all kinds of stuff. So go check that out if that's something that you would be interested in. It's a great way to know about public events that I've got coming up. I've got some coming up in Iowa. I've got some coming up here in Arizona. And we've got some stuff in the works in the fall here in the greater Southwest region that I hope works out. So we'll see. But if you want to know if it's going to work out, that's the place to do it. That's the easiest way to find out. Make sure that you're following me on social media, LinkedIn in particular. That's where I share most of my stuff. Sam Goodman, you'll see my ugly mug. Super easy to follow me. You can also follow the Hop Nerd LLC page, or the Hop Nerd podcast page, or the 10 Ideas to Make Safety Suck Less page. Like, there's all kinds of stuff there. And if you want more of a behind the scenes, I guess behind the scenes laced with tons of memes and mostly reposted memes that I don't invent, that I just go and then I hit reshare to my story. Instagram is a great place to do that. It's just the Hop Nerd. So you can follow along there as well. I've got all the stuff. YouTube, that's where we tend to post videos, and eventually we migrate them to the website so you can download them and use them and put them to good use, all of that stuff. I've got an account on the platform formerly known as Twitter, X. I do have something over there. I don't post there at maybe 2 or 3 times a year, but if you want to go, shits and giggles and just follow along, you can absolutely do that. Now, by the time that you're listening to this, I'm thinking I'm still on vacation. If you need a hand with hop stuff, send me an email. I'll get back to you as soon as I get back on Phoenix time, which means not on vacation time, because I've promised myself and I've promised Avery and Jarrell that the phone is going in the drawer. Like, I'm just not even going to carry it with me. I'm just not even going to take it anywhere. When I say that, people go, oh my God, what if something happens? People survived for thousands and thousands of years without a phone. I think I can survive a couple days walking around the woods without one. So to put everyone at ease, I will be leaving the phone. If I get lost, I will find my way out. I promise. Grew up in the mountains. I can do it. So if you text me, if you call me, if you send me some emails, I don't know that I'll see them, at least not until the very, very end of the day. My goal is to just glance at it maybe once a day, probably not reply. I'm taking a computer, but I'm basically giving my phone charger and laptop charger to Avery and letting her determine if it is important enough for me to check those things. So there you go. I'm going to avoid it while I'm on vacation. But if you're listening to this, I am probably still gone somewhere. I am going to the woods, and I am going to stay there for at least a couple weeks just to recharge and relax, as we have to do, right? We have to do that as people. It's really easy, especially in our social media-driven world, to just see the fun stuff. Like, I know, and I do that too. We all do that. I share the funny stuff and the fun stuff. And I try my best to be as transparent with everybody as I possibly can in select or certain social media posts, definitely here on the podcast, that, you know, it's not all, like, glamorous. And most of it is not glamorous. In fact, it's the opposite of glamorous in a lot of ways. It is busy, and you're on planes, and you're away from home. And I know I'm describing a life that so many of us live. That is not unique to me. So we have to take that time. I know that most of you, probably all of you, are just as passionate about the work that you do with Hop as I am. You're just as pumped. You don't get on here. Some of you do, and that's cool. But you don't get on here and scream about it on a microphone. You're not posting a bunch of crap about it on social media. It's just not your cup of tea. And I understand that. But you're just as passionate. And when you're passionate and you love what you get to do and you're helping, and that's really what we're doing, right? We're helping. We're helping. Helping always comes along with a healthy dose of sacrifice. And so you're making those sacrifices. I'm making those sacrifices. Our community is making those sacrifices to go out and leave things a bit better than how we found it. Helping always comes with some sacrifice. Make sure that you're bringing in some counterweight to that. I'm not going to say balance, because I'm not going to sit here. I'm not complaining. I'm not griping. And I'm definitely not guru in here. That is not what I do. I'm not telling you that I got this whole thing figured out, because I don't. None of us do. And if anybody tells you that they do, they're probably lying to you and lying to themselves. Yeah, that's how that works. We're figuring it out as we go. And what I found that works really well for me, though, is counterweight, not balance. I've always found that if you want to be great at something, if you really want to put a ding in something, that usually comes with a real healthy dose of unbalanced action. Yeah, somebody shared that with me. Like, you think Mike Tyson, when he was like height of Mike Tyson, you think he was balanced? No, he was dramatically skewed towards becoming the best in the world, right? You think about that from any number of professional athletes, artists, musicians. I'm not saying it's healthy to get there, stay there, and live there. You can't live there. You can't. But most of us find ourselves in that position of becoming pretty stinking unbalanced, to put a ding in things, to help, to leave things a bit better than how we found them. Maybe not. We're not on the mission to be the greatest boxer in the world, or to be the greatest anything in the world. We're just out there trying to help. Now, back to my point, with that unbalanced nature that comes along with those things and accepting it for what it is, I think it's good to say it out loud, that no matter how much you love what you do, and I love what I do, and we're passionate about what we do, there is a healthy dose of suck. There's a healthy dose of sacrifice that comes along with that. Helping always has a healthy dose of sacrifice. We have to acknowledge that. And back to my point that I was trying to make here, I don't find much success in trying to create balance in that. But for me, I find more success trying to find healthy counterweights. And what I mean by that is, especially when you've had a spring kind of like I've had, and it's not just me. I talk to a lot of you, and this spring has been busy for all of us in a bunch of different ways. It's been stinking busy. When I get that lull, I throw that counterweight on there, and it helps me skew that just enough to where it's like, okay, going to the woods, spend the time hanging out with my favorite people in the world, recharging, not getting on the phone, pre-recording a bunch of podcasts and doing all that stuff, unbalanced, preloading a bunch of stuff to post to social media and keeping this conversation live automatically. So it happens while I can just go. And I hope that you're finding some of those things that work well for you. I do this stuff on a day-to-day basis too. And again, I'm not saying I'm great at it. I'm not saying that I'm great at it. But I set times, and it's like, well, I'm not going to sit here and work till 8 p.m. I'm just not. You know, Jarrell's hours, I try to mirror his hours as much as I can. Does that always work? No. Do I, you know, for me, another thing that I do is I get up, and I bought one of those fat tire bikes. If you listen to the episode back with Ryan Costello, if you haven't, you should. It's freaking amazing. I go and I ride my bike in the mornings. Or I've got an old cheap treadmill out in my garage. I just go walk on the treadmill because it's kind of hot outside right now. Or if I'm feeling real fun, I'll just go walk around the block a couple times. Yeah, it's beautiful here. I mean, it's hot. It's hot as hell in Arizona right now, but it's cool. I go out and I walk around and I look at roadrunners and little quail, you know, running around, and stare at cactuses, and occasionally find an interesting looking snake, you know, every now and again. Just stuff, just little things in more of a micro sense, I guess. One thing that I found that really helps me a ton with this, just to clear my mind, to act as a bit of a counterweight here in a day-to-day sense, is I mentioned this, but I bought one of those little like computer drawing pads, and I've been using it to design some stuff for the Hop Nerd, which is cool. I think combining stuff that you just like with stuff that's work, it makes it a whole lot less work. I don't know. That's probably coming out really weird, but you know what I mean? It's this idea that like, I like doodling and it's fun. And then if that turns into something that I can share with you guys, that's cool. That's really cool. Why? Because it's fun. It's calming. It's a bit meditative, and it works for work too. That's a blast. Why not? And getting to see so much of the stuff that you guys have sent too. You know this, right? I've shared this with you, that I'm always on the lookout for podcast-inspired art stuff. And so I've been working with local artists, but I've thrown that request out to you too, because I know a ton of you artists, and you love doing this stuff. And just like I do, I'm not super stinking green at it or anything, but it's fun for me. And so if you create something, send it to me. I'll share it, and we might even make it one of the covers for one of the episodes. It's just neat, yeah. So those things, all those little things, and there's so much more that I do that just act as counterweights to our extremely hectic, crazy hectic lives nowadays, and the world is a strange place nowadays. It really is, and things are wacky and weird and wonky, and if you just sit there and stew on it, and it can really overtake you. And I try my best to not do those things. I just don't. So I spend a lot of time thinking about counterweight. So this is a long, rambly way to tell you, and really to ask you the question that I always ask you, or try my best to always ask you: how are things going in your neck of the woods? I hope that they're going real well. And if they're not going so real well, reach out to somebody that you know. Reach out to me. I'm always happy to have a chat with you. And always be on the lookout for those counterweights and how you can better manage those things in your day-to-day lives. I'm not here to tell you what they are. I don't know what they are. I can just tell you what I've been doing to try my best to live my best life. And I invest a good amount of time into it every day, and every day just trying to get a little bit better at that. That's it. So with all of that being said, I hope that things are going well for you. I can tell you, I'm guessing here, but I know it's a really, 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 really well-educated guess. I'm having a freaking blast on vacation. So, and if you're not on vacation, you should plan one soon. They're epic. Let's jump on into today's episode. So today, I'm coming back to a question that I really like to ask a lot. And I mentioned it in a previous episode around the notion of zero. And the question is, do we want to know more, or do we want to know less? I always come back to this quote, and it's a quote from a near and dear friend of mine that was a director of a facility and great leader. You meet those, right? Those folks that are just freaking awesome leaders. And I remember when we first started having some of these hop conversations, and as we started to move through some of this stuff, the quote roughly from this individual sounded like this: I really like this stuff because it helps me know more. As a leader, I don't need a lot. There's not much that I truly need to be a good leader. But one thing that I really need a lot of is information. Accurate, real deal, raw information. The good, the bad, the ugly, and the scary, as we put it a lot of times. And that always stuck with me. And I share that all the time because it's so true. There's not a lot that we need to be great leaders. Don't get me wrong. There's a ton of stuff that goes into being a great leader. But without good information, if people can't tell you the truth, and especially in our wacky, wild, and crazy worlds, holy crap, we can't afford to know less. We just can't afford to know less. Our organizations can't afford to know less. Our leaders can't afford to know less. Our people can't afford to know less. We can only afford to know more. We need to know more and more and more. In our volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous world, Luke, all right? In our wild and crazy freaking world, knowing less isn't very good for us. It just isn't very good for us. We tee up human and organizational performance. I tee that up a lot of ways in this frame. So many of the concepts that we talk about in HOP, these leadership principles, this leadership philosophy, these ideas, these better beliefs and assumptions. To me, when we lead through those, when they're our North Star, one of the primary outputs of that is that we're creating an environment in which people can tell us the truth. We're creating an environment in which people can teach us operational reality. So they can teach us their story of normal, everyday, usually successful work. What I'm saying is we're creating an environment where we get to know more. Yeah. Phew. Yeah, right? That's really what we're doing. We're setting the stage. We're setting the stage where people feel comfortable telling us the truth, the stuff that they know we don't want to have to hear as leaders, and the stuff that they know they definitely don't want to have to tell us. The good news is good. It's easy. But when it's the weird, the wacky, the strange, like this has been working and now it's not working and that thing never has worked right. And every time I work on that freaking thing, the hair on my arm stand up. And every time I go to ask for this, it's so dumb. And on and on and on. We're creating an environment where we can have those conversations. As leaders, it lets us know more. Back to my near and dear friend's point, as a leader, there's not a whole bunch of crap that I need, but information is one of those things that I really, 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 really freaking need. I can't tell you how much I need it because I need information. It allows us to know more. It gives us more information, better information, more accurate information to make better operational decisions. As leaders, as organizations, as people near the sharp end, it gives us more information to make better operational decisions. And I apologize if you hear the woof, woof, woof in the background. I think I just got a package delivered. So that's my security system, in case you were wondering. That is my little Yorkie poo. I have many, many dogs. I have a small menagerie of dogs, and she is the loudest. And I think she is the smallest, too. She's the most vicious dog that there is. So if you hear her barking and screaming in the background, yeah, it just is what it is. You can say hello to Lily. She's freaking awesome. She's a little Yorkie poo, and she's a blast. But it helps us create an environment in which we get to know more. Now, back to our question, do we want to know more or know less? I always operate under this general idea that anything that creates silence in our organization is bad for us. Yeah, we know this. Anything that creates silence for us in our organizations, anything that creates silence, it's bad for us. It's bad for our businesses and it's bad for our people. There's a lot of stuff in our work worlds that should scare us. And I think that's a fair statement. There's a lot of stuff in our work worlds that should scare us, but silence should scare the absolute shit out of us. Knowing less should scare the absolute shit out of us. Yeah, yeah. In some places of the world, I think we call that shite. Yeah, shite, shit. Yeah, shite, shit, shite, shit. Yeah, it should scare the absolute shite out of us. 110%. Now, we framed this up a few episodes back around zero. Zero helps to create silence. Silence is bad for us. Silence, you know, zero really ultimately ends with us knowing less. We can't afford to know less. Boom. Yeah, yeah. Now, think about that through the sense of our normal hamster wheel of safety. And I've posted about the hamster wheel. I've shared about the hamster wheel a lot. To me, the hamster wheel of safety is blame, shame, retrain. And this is the way that we framed it up in 10 Ideas, the book, 10 Ideas to Make Safety Suck Less, is blame, shame, retrain. It's the hamster wheel of safety mediocrity. And I'll just call it the hamster wheel of mediocrity, probably generally speaking within our organizations, right? Things go wrong. Instead of really learning, we move towards the victim, last person that touched it, last person that stood near it, and we blame, shame, and retrain them. And we're just on this endless loop of blame, shame, retrain. And really, it's just pushing this rock of pain up the mountain of shame and trying to hope that things change. Yeah, we're punishing people. That's really what we're talking about here. We're punishing people. It's a corporate tale as old as time, a tale that I have lived through, you have lived through, we have all lived through, some of us are continuing to live through. If we finally just put enough pain on people for making those pesky errors and mistakes, then finally, we'll make those mean old employees stop making errors and mistakes. We'll finally fix people and everything will be okay. I think that this comes from this general notion that all events are preventable, right? Yeah, and that because we think that all incidents are preventable, it moves us towards safe means the absence of negative occurrences, which moves us towards this idea, or coupled with this idea, that we think that most events are caused by human error. So since everything's preventable, and we got to get rid of all these preventable events because everything's preventable, zero. Well, maybe tie this into zero a little bit. And human error causes all these things. Ultimately, it's all human error because people should just pay more attention. They should just care more. They should just try harder. We focus on trying to fix people. And really where we get is to this idea that if people just followed the stinking rules, if they cared more, if they tried harder, if they were more situationally aware, then nothing bad could happen. So when something bad happens, it bolsters our approach of blame, shame, and retrain. See, people should have just cared more, tried harder, been more, been better, been more situationally aware, chose to not make errors because, you know, that's totally how that works. If you just try hard enough, you won't make errors. Okay. That logic makes perfect and total sense to us to push towards blame, shame, and retrain then. We just go towards blame, shame, and retrain. Now, what happens, though? When we have this conversation, and we know this, we've said this a few times, almost always we're punishing people. We're blame, shaming, and retraining them. We're punishing them for something that they didn't intend to do or for something that they didn't intend to happen in the first place, hoping that through this punishment it'll make them not do it again. Yeah, say that out loud. Yeah, this is a pause with me. Ready? We're punishing them for something that they didn't intend to do in the first place, hoping that it will make them not do it again. Uh-huh. So, as we continue to play this game of blame, shame, and retrain, we get into what's commonly referred to as the fear loop. Yeah, the fear loop. In Clive Lloyd's book, there's a ton of stuff about this. There's a lot of stuff out there in the internet about it, too. But human error occurs. We blame, shame, and retrain. And then, of course, because we blame, shame, and retrain, we grow silence. I would say that we cause people to become quieter and quieter and quieter, and then eventually become silent. Yeah, we know how this plays out. Which then leads to people not telling us crap. We know less. And because we know less, back to some of Clive's amazing work, you can't fix a secret. So the condition, the thing that we can actually work on, the condition, the situation, the setting, the context, the condition goes unchanged because we've invested all of our time and resources into blame, shame, and retrain, which has then not only not fixed a freaking thing, it's done absolutely nothing but harm usually. And that harm that it has caused is creation of silence. So the condition remains, the event or similar events happen again or something along those lines. We have another negative occurrence. And where do we land? Human error. And we just continue on this loop, on this hamster wheel. A whole bunch of movement that feels real stinking good, really looks like we're doing something, but it's not really doing anything. We're staying in the same place. We're just sitting in the same place. And not only are we sitting in the same place, but we're usually just growing more and more and more silence. Anything that creates silence, it's bad for us. It's bad for our people. It's bad for our businesses. So, how can we start to outgrow some of this? This is for my leader friends out there. This is for my VP friends, my COO friends, my CEO friends, my senior director friends, for all those folks, for my safety leaders out there, for all those people. Here are some things that we can start doing. The first thing, we have to stop accepting human error as the answer. Because if we view human error as the primary problem within our work worlds, instead of viewing it for what it is, always there, really stinking normal, really stinking boring, probably the one thing that we can depend on in our work world, that human error is there in highly successful outcomes, it is there in not so successful outcomes, that it really is just a byproduct. What I would say, a byproduct of human innovation, a byproduct that almost always results in success until it doesn't result in success. So then we label it with that very pointed label of human error. We have to stop accepting human error as the answer, as the ending point, right? Human error, when we see these operational surprises occur, it's just a triggering event. We view it as the starting point of deeper understanding and learning, not as the end. It's the beginning, not the end. It's the beginning. It's the first shovel in the dirt. It's not this deep learning when you say, ha ha, human error. It's just not. It's always there. So when you discover it, don't be surprised. Leader friends, when people bring you that answer, I'm here to tell you that people bring you a good amount of what you want to hear. I hope this isn't a surprise to you. If you've accepted the answer, when someone brings you that event report or that investigation or that learning, I'm using that term loosely, and they say, aha, we've cracked it. They messed up. Dun, dun, dun. Sherlock Holmes. Yeah. And you said, okay, cool. What are we doing about that? Oh, okay. You blame, shame, retain. Okay, cool. Yeah, that sounds, if they messed up, that sounds like the right move. Cool. Thanks for that. If you've accepted that, we view that as the bar now. Right. We view that as the bar. I'm going to bring you more of that. I'm going to bring you that. I'm going to say, okay, that's what they're looking for. If in the past, when these event investigations or learning reviews have taken place, post-event, post-operational surprise, safety or otherwise, and the first questions you've asked down through your organization, and you've said something along the lines of, who was it? What do they deserve based off of how bad it was or how bad it could have been? Or you ask that in a little bit more of an indirect way. Huh? Were they wearing gloves? Huh? Did they follow the procedure? Huh? Did somebody break a rule? Yeah, when you ask it that way, guess what people are going to bring you? They're going to bring you those answers. And I'm here to tell you something that many of you, most of you already know. Those are pretty boring answers. And I would tell you that those are really bad questions to ask, especially when those are the first questions you ask. And what I mean by that is I was always the smart ass in my organization that if I get those emails, no matter your title, my instant reply is going to be, hey, listen, you know, the better question to ask here, let's try this. Instead of saying, did somebody mess up? Maybe you should ask is this person okay? Who's hurt? That seems like a much better question to ask. If I tell you, hey, somebody's been hurt, you should probably ask, how are they? Not, are they wearing gloves? Who broke that rule? Who needs to be in trouble? Who do I need to beat with my big old stick and fix? It doesn't work. Yeah, so when you do that, people just bring you more of that. So stop accepting human error as the answer. When they bring you that answer, don't be mean. Don't be an ass. Don't be like, oh, how dumb. Sam said, no. I know that's where we were going before, but we know that human error is pretty boring. Yeah, of course it's there. Of course somebody messed up. Of course they made a mistake. Yeah, because they're people. Bring me something a bit more interesting. There's got to be something deeper there. Yeah. Go seek to understand how it made sense. Yeah, that had to make sense to that person. So if we can understand how it made sense, we can probably find some good opportunities for learning. What's the condition? What's the context? What's the thing that I can actually put my hands on that I can support you in, make it a bit better out there? Go dig into that. That's it. Yeah, that's the first step. Stop accepting human error, right? And I think wrapped into that is the other point that I want to make, and I think I kind of got there. But that react versus respond, yeah, people only tell you what you allow them to tell you. Yeah, and all reporting is voluntary. And not only is it voluntary, but then once I report, how I package that information, how much of that information you get, how I scrub and sterilize that information to make it acceptable to you. Yeah, people are only going to tell you what you let them tell you. A good signal for those folks is how you respond. So when people bring you that thing that they don't want to have to bring you, and you don't want them to bring it to you, you know what I'm talking about. Hey, listen, that thing caught on fire. bad day, a frustrating day. Don't let that frustration seep out. If you have to pause, go take a pause. Shut your door. Don't immediately respond. Go outside and kick some rocks. Just cuss at the sky. I'm not going to tell you that smoking cigarettes is good for you, but if you have to smoke them, if you got them, smoke them. If you need to go get zenned up, that's what I tend to do. If you need a cold brew and a healthier tobacco alternative, such as a Zen, do that thing. Go rock out to some Pantera. I don't know. But take a pause and let that information process and then focus on crafting a bit of a response before you just snap to a response. Instead of melting down, panicking, freaking out. I always liked that more of a restorative approach that Sidney Decker always talked about. You know, instead of asking who was it, what do they deserve, that normal kind of traditional question. Even if you just start with this idea and just start with these questions right out of the gate. Who's hurt? What do they need? who's responsible for getting them what they need, and are they getting it for them? What's the status of the plant? Give me plant status. Are we safe? Are we secure? Are we okay? Are we operational? Well, fill me in. And once you get through those kind of normal response questions, then move towards how do we learn? What do we need to learn? Is there something deeper to learn here? That's where I would go. So those are the first two things that I would encourage you to do. And I share them as the first two things because I think those are the two things. And I know there's a bunch of organizational factors and pressures and tensions and all these different things that we have to deal with. But as individuals, they are things that we can start to change. We can start to model in our work worlds, especially as a senior leader, my VP friends, my COO friends, my CEO friends, my SVPs of this and SVPs of that and VPs of this and Ps of that and Ds of that. And, you know, those you folks. My amazing friends out there that I get to spend so much time with, those are things that you can start to model and you can start to set a bit better of a bar in your organization because those people are going to bring you the stuff that you want them to bring you. Ultimately, they're going to live up to your expectations. That's what we do. We're going to live up to your expectations. If you normalize melting down and reacting, I'm going to mirror that behavior. Maybe not exactly. But you're big dealing it, I'm going to big deal it. I'm going to freak out. I'm going to panic. At least I'm more likely to. We're normalizing that. When you accept human error as the answer, and not only accept it as the answer, but want it as the answer, that's what I'm going to bring you because that's what you're going to accept. When I bring you a whole bunch of really context-rich information, you're like, well, no, they just follow the rules. None of that matters. The condition doesn't matter if you just care more. Yeah, that's what I'm going to bring you. So I share those first because I think they're the things that are right there and within our own power to just start to model a bit different behaviors and to start to change, not in a mean way, not in a pointed way, but we can just start to build a bit better expectations around those things within our organizations, especially when we sit higher. It's a bit easier when we sit higher in that organizational hierarchy. So what comes along with that is stop blaming the victim. Stop blaming the last person that touched it or the last person that stood near it, which helps move you away from going down that path of, oh, you did it. Blame, shame, retrain. Back to that point. Fix people. Seek to understand how it made sense. Yeah. Seek to understand the context. Instead of just saying human error, seek out conditions. How did we have this condition that allowed for this to happen? How did we end up where this was even a possibility? When somebody messes up, this shouldn't be the outcome. How can we work on that outcome? Life-saving controls, safeguards. How can we improve our error tolerance around these things? How can we make things a bit less brittle? How can we make it far easier for things to go well? How can we make it far easier for things to go well? Some of this comes along with the other point of anticipating failure. Yeah, understanding that failure will occur. It's not an if, it's a when. And especially around our areas of critical risk, really asking those questions, exploring those questions deeply, deeply. And I'm going to couple this with the other one around creating opportunities for learning, not just post-event. We do an okay job at learning post-event, but normalize learning overall. It shouldn't be an abnormal thing. The fact that we're learning should be like normal everyday stuff, and we should be doing that as often as possible. And if you're just doing it with events, you're missing a whole bunch. I would say that you're missing the majority of the information that's available to you within your organization, because we know that when things go wrong, there's some information that's only available to us after things go wrong. Once we have hindsight and on outcome and all those different things. Yeah, we can see. We can easily see now. And there's those handful of things where we go, well, we could have not known this until things completely broke down. But what we also recognize post-event is that there's a good amount of that information available. And where does it live? It lives in normal, everyday, usually successful work. Create opportunities for learning, not just after events. Not just around interesting or wildly interesting successes, but around normal, everyday, usually successful work. VP friends, COO friends, CEO friends, VPs and SVPs and Ps and all those folks. You know, it's within your power to create space for that to happen. And I've said this a bunch, but it's important to recognize you just can't will this stuff into existence. You can't just say, I demand that we go and we learn from normal work. You know why? Because your people are freaking busy. You're busy. You're busy. They're busy. Everybody's busy. That's the not so secret secret. Yeah. When I'm sitting high up in an organization looking down, I'm thinking everybody is not nearly as busy as me. I'm just thinking that they're not. Yeah. If I'm sitting in the middle of the organization, I'm looking up going, they're not as busy as me. And those folks that work for me aren't as busy as me. And when I'm in the bottom of the organization, I'm looking up going, all those lazy bastards that set up through this organization, I'm the only one on a damn thing around here. But when you actually connect everybody's stories, everybody kind of goes, holy crap, we're all really, but they're busy. You have to create those opportunities. You can't just say, go do. You can't just pour more crap on people's plates, because guess what happens? Stuff falls off. And the stuff that doesn't feel nearly as important, the stuff that doesn't feel like it directly impacts operational outputs to production and efficiency and whatever the widget thing that we're making, whether we're making electricity or we're making Slinkies, I don't know. Anything that doesn't feel like it directly impacts that will start to fall off the plate. You have to prioritize learning. You have to prioritize not just post-event learning, but pre-event learning. And a great way to start to prioritize that, an excellent way to start to prioritize that, is just by deliberately, physically carving out some space for it to happen. Giving people that room in their day. Planning it out. Going down that path by saying, we're going to go out and we're going to operationally learn. What are some really interesting places we want to learn pre-event? All right, I'm giving people time to do that. We're gonna prep up facilitators, and we're gonna give people time and space to make this happen. And understand that, is it going to cost you some hours? Yeah, but it's an investment, and it's an investment that you will receive a massive return on, not just in the space of safety, but in production, in efficiency, in quality, and just general operational excellence kind of stuff. And even with this one, bringing it back to our idea that blame, shame, retrain creates silence. And the way that we get to blame, shame, and retrain is that we view human error as the cause of our events. Because if it wasn't for those pesky people and them messing up, making errors and mistakes, and we would have never got here. You start to understand when you learn deeper about normal, everyday, usually successful work. Guess what you discover? Success. Normal success work. I found a whole bunch of error. Holy crap. I found a whole bunch of places where people are having to adapt and work around and figure out, and they're creating success. Holy crap. Error is pretty stinking normal. This job is our highest, most successful thing ever. And I found way more human error and mistake in it than I found even in that event that happened, you know, a couple months ago. Holy crap. Error is pretty normal. Maybe error isn't the cause of all of our problems. Maybe all this blame, shaming, and retraining really is that hamster wheel. We're punishing people for things that they didn't intend to do in the first place, hoping that they don't do it again. Holy crap, that sounds bad. And I think that is bad. That's clearly not working. We're just stuck in one spot with a bunch of movement, a bunch of effort, thinking that we're making things better, but really we're just creating silence. Holy crap, maybe human error isn't the end. It's the beginning of this discussion. All of those things and many more. I'm going here. This is a long one today. I'm looking at my little counter here, and I'm approaching 4240 right as I say these words. So I know this is a long one. There's so much more that we could unpack here, but I could unpack here. But I think that those are some areas, especially for my leader friends out there. Ask yourself that question. Do you want to know more or know less? Blame, shame, and retrain. It makes you know less. Just like zero makes you know less. You can't afford to know less. As my near and dear friend said, as a leader, there's not a whole bunch that I need, but the thing that I do need is the information, and I need good information, because with good information, we can make good operational decisions. Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hot Nerd Podcast, the Hot Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehotnerd.com or send me an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye.